promises, believing all your lies.
Welcome to the 61st podcast of the Never Give Up Show. I am Bailey Smith, your host. I apologize about the music. I don't know. Something's going on here. We got to get it fixed. Our call-in number, 516-531-9643. 516-531-9643. We are also live right now on Blog Talk Radio. /Friends Talk, the Never Give Up Show. The show will be uploaded to my website, thenevergiveupshow.com. And it will be on SoundCloud and Buzzsprout and a whole bunch of other platforms after the show's over. I'm glad to be back. Tonight's show is extremely personal for me. As a lot of my fellow advocates and my listeners know, I was failed by the police. And when somebody sent me a clip of the video that I posted on the show, it touched me in a very, very, very deep way, as I'm sure it has most of you or many of you, or those that will see it later on. And I knew I had to have our guest on tonight to share the story behind it. So I would like to welcome our guest, Rhonda Reyna, who is a mother of two children. She divorced her first husband after 11 years amicably, with whom she shares a wonderful son. They mediated, never went to court. She never asked for child support or alimony and had a peaceful divorce and arrangements between themselves and the remainder of her son's childhood. She met her daughter's father in late 2004. He quickly pushed her into a relationship with him, convincing her to move in with him in mid-2005. She quit her career as a forensic scientist in 2006 to be a full-time mother to her son. Sounds also very typical, and all the red flags are right there. He then lured her into working in his business, running a multi-layered equestrian program, which she did for 9 years. She never took a salary, and she was told money was going into a trust for her daughter, which was a lie. They separated in 2014, which is then when the post-separation abuse began to escalate. Although they were he was a never engaged father, and was the full-time primary attachment. She was full-time primary attachment parent. He asked for 50-50 custody, farming out her daughter's care to alcoholic and drug addicted woman rather than letting her be her own mother's child. All very typical, unfortunately. Her post-separation experience follows the pattern of the family court playbook described by the National Women's Coalition, which I attached to the show. Also, things got much worse during the COVID lockdowns and culminated in the event of June 28, 2021, where my daughter and I were attacked in broad daylight. She was seized violently by 8 police officers, and she has not seen her since. I have had multiple careers in banking, biotechnology, equestrian sports, and running her own business, as well as many side jobs. She enjoys sports, even though she has suffered from chronic injuries obtained during her days training horses. She says, I do my best to keep busy and upbeat and work to self-educate. I just want to warn those who watch the video. It's very triggering. I'm going to bring Rhonda on. Again, our phone number is 516-531-9643. And Rhonda, you are on. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Bailey. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Thank you for being on. And, you know, last minute, I appreciate it. I know we are in a time difference. Again, I don't know why your call dropped. If anybody has an issue with your call dropping, please message me. I don't know. Maybe it has to do with the music. I have no idea. Anyways, welcome to the Never Give Up show. I appreciate, again, you being on. And, again, we have 2 hours. Usually we get callers. Begin wherever you want. I may stop you here and there to ask you some questions. I know I gave a fairly long intro, but I'm sure there's a lot more to your story. So begin wherever you want.
Oh, well, I'm very new to this, and the title of your show is so apropos, the Never Give Up show, because in my experience, I have felt like giving up so many times, and I have felt like the phoenix constantly rising from the ashes of death to renew and come back at this again. Anybody who has experienced the family court playbook that is described by the Women's Coalition International, which was written by Cindy Dumas and her son, Damon Dumas, who endured years of abuse at his dad's hands. And Cindy has done a fabulous job of laying out what this family court playbook looks like. And I can literally plug in the names of every nefarious player who has participated in torturing me, trafficking my child to her abusive dad, depriving me of my rights. It's been an incredibly arduous journey for the past 7 years. My daughter was only 6 when we separated. So she was very young. She was in those tender year doctrines that used to be talked about early on in family court. From the research I've done, it looks like the family court was literally brought into existence when I was born by Ronald Reagan in 1969, who later said that he regretted doing it. It does not follow the Constitution of the United States. Our rights are being deprived. A judge with unlimited power is making decisions that have huge ramifications for children and family members, be it the mom who is the one who's abused or the dad who's abused. And these court cases are pretty typical. Families are in there when one parent seems to have this, I'm just going to be blunt and say it, a personality disorder, malignant narcissism, Machiavellianism, sociopathy, and psychopathy. And I learned all about this in the aftermath and what was happening to me. I knew my daughter's dad was extremely difficult to live with, but I didn't really see the magnitude of what he was about until we separated. And my daughter naturally wanted to be with me. She expected to be with me. I was a stay-at-home mom, but I was running a business. I could take her with me. I could manage my hours. I was her primary attachment parent, and he was gone a lot, and he was having affairs on me behind my back that I wouldn't realize how many until afterwards. So she was very close to me. And of course, you go get into separation, and these dads lawyer up with these very expensive lawyers in San Mateo County, California, which back then started at $450 an hour. Now they're well above $850 an hour, if not $1,000 an hour. So only very wealthy people can afford them. And they have their playbook down. So mm-hmm. it became a negotiation of I could not afford to live on my own because I had been working with him for 9 years, and he was hoarding all the money, lying to me, saying that it was in a bank account. So I didn't have any choice when he said, I will pay your expenses for the first year if you give me 50 custody. I thought that that was my best alternative. I had nowhere else to go. I fit your typical super traded woman that Sandra Brown talks about in her book, Women Who Love Psychopaths, inside relationships of inevitable harm with sociopaths, narcissists, and psychopaths. So I initially had done what I thought would be the for my daughter, which was going to be like a 2 day on, 2 day off, every other week, 3 days to match out the time frame. And I was, even in my relationship, always felt like I was on a train wreck. And he always lured me in with something. Being someone who loved horses and was running an equestrian center, he would just buy me another horse or send me to a horse show and kind of keep that carrot in front of my nose. But I always mm-hmm. felt like my life was about to explode at any moment, and it did. And then he just wanted to put more layers of control. As long as he got his way, things were okay. But as soon as I started to question things or push back or say no, that's when he exerted his financial power over me. So it was always unequal. And my lawyers were not advocating for me. Through this experience, I've learned how my lawyers were making back-end deals with his attorney. And I was just getting walked down the plank. When the COVID lockdowns hit, I wanted to homeschool my mom, our daughter, and he wouldn't let me. And that did not make any so ever. I'm an available mom. I'm retired by one career, and I wanted to take care of our child. Children thrive when they have a stay-at-home parent. Mm. But the family mm-hmm. court model does not support that, does it? They say mom yeah. has to go back to work, even if she's working 10, 12-hour days, and then farming the care of the child out to someone else for some sick, twisted reason. They think that that's better. And it just all has to do with money, you know, getting the parent who would supposedly be paying the child support off the hook from paying the child support. And it's ridiculous. So I wasn't allowed. He had the power over me. So he didn't want me homeschooling our own child. He thought it was okay to pay a 50-year-old man to tutor our 12-year-old daughter and leave them at home alone in the house. Now, what do you think about that? Those are just automatic red flags. Just not a good idea. So the man was inappropriate with my daughter. She complained to me, and I let her dad know, and I said, you need to complain to your dad about that. And supposedly he took care of it. But there had been incidences where he was physically violent with our daughter. If she didn't want to go with him, he was very unreasonable with us. He's remarried to his third wife, and there's a lot of domestic violence in that house. A lot of screaming, yelling. It's more physical. He would yell at me, so it was psychological and emotional abuse. And he would yell at me and call me stupid in front of both children on a pretty regular basis. What I did for my son is, since I had a good relationship with his dad, I talked to his dad and I said, I have a baby and I can't get out of this situation right now, but our son has an option. How about if you take him full time, have him in school down there, and I'll have him on the weekends. He'll be safer that way. And so I flipped it. And again, I'm a reasonable person. Ironically, in this story, my son's father was in law enforcement. When we divorced, he was a police lieutenant, and he retired out as a police chief. So we were able to make reasonable arrangements, between ourselves. And as I look back on this, it really wasn't fair that when I moved out of town to live with my daughter's dad, that changed our parenting arrangement, which was week on, week off. But my ex-husband never fought me on it. You want to be the stay-at-home mom? You want to have our son? Great, that's fine. Never fought me on it. And we just always made those arrangements among ourselves. But when it comes to my daughter's dad, no, he's very controlling and it has to be his way. And he's very abusive if he doesn't get his way. So my daughter has always rejected vaccines. And it was always a very dramatic experience going to the doctor to force her to have vaccines. And I was the one who would have to go because she would become completely hysterical and unglued. So her dad always asked me, even after we were broken up, will you take her to go get this done? And I remember the last occasion I was there, it took three nurses to restrain her, and they were giving her three injections. And she was so hysterical, she didn't even look like my child. Afterwards, she had to lay down, and they put a blood pressure cuff on her because she was so extremely traumatized by it. And it really got me to question what was going on with vaccines. And again, I'm going to be very blunt and very bold about this. And, you know, why was she so against them? I don't know. There was something inherent in her soul that just didn't like it. So in a turn of events, her dad forced the sale of my home in Redwood City that we bought together. He had a house in Woodside. I had a littler, much smaller space in Redwood City. And in a vicious, vindictive move, he sued me for partition. And you've got no prayer on that. If both names are on the title, the house is forced to sell. So he forced me out of the house, which then affected my ability to have my daughter. I decided to come home to my hometown of Santa Cruz, which was a lot more affordable and where all my family and friends and childhood people that I grew up with were. And it was just a much more peaceful place. But that being said, and he would not let me bring my daughter with me to Santa Cruz, and the family courts are not very agreeable to move ways.
How far were you from him?
Only 40 miles. And I had talked to the judge about me just driving my daughter back and forth to school. And he just decided, no, I'm not going to do that. He said, I'm not going to let you do that. That means your daughter's going to be about 40 minutes to an hour in the car in the morning and a 40 minutes an hour in the afternoon. And I think school was somewhere about start time of 8:20, end time of 3:10. And it's the most ridiculous thing for the reason that many parents in Silicon Valley work extremely long hours. So they put their children in pre-daycare and aftercare, doing three activities, and the kids aren't coming home till 7 o'clock at night. So where on this planet does one judge get to decide what a family member is going to do? And that is my big beef with family court. They try to tell you how to live your life. Once you're in that hell, you know, they tell you where you can work, where you can move to, where, you know, you can't go outside, you know, the seven counties or whatever distance that is. You can't move out of state. You can't have your own children. You can't work part-time. You should be working full-time. You know, they've got this formula that is just ridiculous. Right. Anybody who, you know, where's our freedom in that, right? That's so anti-constitutional. Mm-hmm. That's so anti-American. Yep. So I even remember going to court during the COVID lockdowns, and he had filed a domestic violence restraining order against me simply to gain access to the courts, which were shut down during COVID. So he wanted to do some sort of custody time change. So he snuck it in as a DVRO, which was complete phony, fake, and false, and is evidenced by the fact that the judge assigned us to go to family court services for mediation, which you have to do when you're working on anytime there's a custody modification. So that proved that it was a fake DVRO for him to get access. And during that time—
But you didn't live near each other. and you were on COVID lockdown, where did he get, I know it was very hard to get, it was a restraining order, right?
Yeah, he just filed for a restraining order, and
but you
he
have
had
to have
a big,
proof,
long
I mean,
list of changes he wanted to make. He just wanted to make some changes, and I can't remember what all of them were, but what I brought
but
to the judge's attention.
How did he manage to get, look, I know it's all corruption, but I'm just curious to know what his proof was in order to get that restraining order.
I had done, oh, good question. So I had written a blog as a horse trainer to one of the local next door neighborhood forums, advising people in the equestrian community that horse trainers were ripping off clients by overcharging on horse training fees and veterinarians. I didn't name him or anything. I just said, FYI, anyone who has a horse trainer who is having your horse trainer make arrangements for your shoeing and your vet bills, pay your vet and your shoer directly, because an infamous trainer in the area is charging double, triple the amount. So you're getting ripped off. The shoe
but
is getting ripped off.
But that's not violence.
It's not, but he used it. That's what he used to say. There was something about
you have
he tried
to
say,
you're scared of someone. Your life is threatened by someone, and you're scared of them physically that they'll harm you in order to get a restraining order. And even that's
right.
hard
he,
to get.
In theory, but what he was trying to say is that I violated the court order by defaming him or something like that. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. But the judge,
but
like,
so you
yeah,
said
so
you
the judge said.
You violated
I'm trying
the
to remember
restraining
order.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, not the restraining order, the family. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's the afternoon, and I haven't even. I'm off on a tangent because I'm trying to lay down the foundation, and I don't
okay.
remember exactly what he used. I can't say, but it was
okay.
bogus. It
yes,
was something
obviously.
About my free speech because they put a gag order on me. They didn't want me talking about the family law case with my daughter, and they didn't want me talking about the therapist that our daughter was using. And I did not like the therapist because she wasn't really helping our daughter, and
mm-hmm.
Santa Clara had like the highest COVID cases. And so I said, well, you know, my daughter doesn't really want to go there anymore, and this isn't doing anything. So can we, you know, I just want to rescind my consent. We're done. And she didn't want to do it because that was impacting her ability, her money. So she was already
right.
charging a lot of money. Her regular rate was $325 an hour, and she told me because it's court ordered, and I got her to reduce it down to $200, and I couldn't afford that. I was making $19 an hour. So you can see how, you know, they pushed me into agreeing to get a therapist for my daughter, but then there it was so vague in our agreement that there was no end point in it. And I've since mm-hmm. looked at the American Psychology Association's guidelines. You're supposed to have a time frame on it of like 6 months. Like, what are you doing? What are you treating the child for? What, you know, what is your treatment
mm-hmm.
plan? None of that was in place. So that mm-hmm. sparked a big fight between Dad and I because I rescinded consent. And so that
mm-hmm.
was on the DVRO request, the fact that I don't want my daughter to see this therapist who was just doing play therapy. Which, you know, you can take them to anybody for that. That's, she wasn't really getting therapy. So that had happened. And then the COVID vaccines came out, and the school was putting a lot of pressure on parents for vaccines, which my daughter doesn't like. These were new. These were experimental. And I had begun mm-hmm. working in biotechnology and actually making injections that are the same as vaccines. But basically, I was manufacturing chemical solutions that go into animals, and then they produce antibodies, and the antibodies get purified. However, I was looking at all the material data safety sheets for what was going in there, mercury, formaldehyde, something like DSO. We were doing Western blot to cancer cell lines, and on the little vials it was saying human embryonic brain, human embryonic kidney cell. And I started to ask about the science behind this. I'm like, what is this? And that's where I really began to investigate what are vaccines. And I had to work in a fume hood. I had to wear gloves. I had to wear eyewear. I had to wear a lab coat. If I spilled even a drop of this chemical on the counter, it was a complete hazmat cleanup. And yet we were sticking this in a vial and then injecting it to animals. And oftentimes the animals would die. So they'd get a new batch of animals and make new chemicals. And you just keep doing this until somehow some animals survive. And that's what really got me questioning the safety of vaccines and what was this whole issue. And I started to pay attention to the fact that my daughter had never liked them. So.
And also, if I can interject, if this was in the very beginning, they were not giving it to young kids in the very beginning.
No, but my daughter's school was pushing for it, really, really pushing hard, pushing the mask wearing, pushing getting your kids to the doctor and getting multiple injections. So they wanted them to get meningitis. You know, meningitis has never been a problem. They wanted them to get the HPV vaccine. And I had done my research and I saw all these horrible, horrible problems with the HPV vaccine. I bought the book. I forget the title of it, but there was a book written. I looked online. I saw that many girls in New Zealand had suffered permanent injuries from HPV. And the very fact that my 12-year-old daughter was not sexually active means she was at no risk of contracting anything. I also spoke with my gynecologist who said, in America, women do not run the risk of getting cervical cancer because you're getting pap smears.
Well,
monitoring
men,
they want
men to get the HPV. They want boys to get the HPV because they're the carriers at a young age.
They wanted everybody to get this before they were sexually active, and it doesn't make sense, and that's a parental decision. It's personal choice. But what happened is the school was pressuring us. The doctor was pressuring us. And then my daughter's dad was not reasonable, and despite me working in the sciences, despite me having a degree and actually making chemicals, it was a power trip for him. He decided, you know, he was going to want her to get certain vaccines and against my will, but I did prevail on the HPV. I said, no, she's not getting that. She's not getting meningitis. I want to wait. I want to do more research. The doctor wouldn't discuss it with me, but he and I had already had, we just couldn't talk to each other. There was just no communicating. Right. So then here comes the pressure to get the COVID-19 vaccine. And I get an email from his attorney asking me, so he wants to know if he can give her the COVID-19 vaccine. And by that time, I'd already done the research on it. I'd looked at the Moderna patent. It's 435 pages. I printed it. I looked at it. I looked at the VAERS data. That's the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System.
Right.
And it was 60 pages long. And there had already been a number of deaths and thousands of injuries and adverse events just in August of 2021 and before that. So I laid it out. I said, this is what I've done. I've actually made chemicals that are similar. You know, the mercury goes in, the aluminum, these adjuvants are very toxic. I've started looking at the graphs of autism and the vaccine schedule, and I see a direct correlation that as the vaccine schedule increased for children on a linear matching graph, so did autism. And so I think these are very dangerous, and no, it's experimental. I don't want her to have it. And I messaged him as well. And my daughter sent me a text on a Thursday. The way our parenting schedule worked is it was I would pick her up after school on Friday, drop her off on Monday unless there was a holiday, and he had her for the days in between. But she said, Dad wants to go get me the COVID vaccine, and she was terrified of it and didn't want it. I said, no, he can't do that. I messaged him. I said, no, I do not consent. Well, he picked her up from school on my parenting day and went and took her to some unknown pharmacy where my daughter described he and a woman chased her around violently and she was screaming, and the woman stabbed her with a needle and she got injected.
Oh my God.
I was hysterical. I was hysterical. So and in our court order, I'm supposed to have 7 days notice before medical procedure. I'm supposed to be able to be there. And, you know, my legal rights are intact. I don't care what the family court says. That's my choice. Judges are violating their orders by trying to say if a dad can give a kid an injection. So because I believe it's so deadly, and now it's been proven at least 2 million people have died from these injections, we're having
and
a
also,
sudden,
yeah, they're saying that young girls are having to not be given to young girls because it's causing them problems when they get to menstruation in a puberty age.
It's interfering with
it's causing,
Yeah, it's interfering with the menstrual cycle. I experienced when her dad got the jab and she was going back and forth, it messed up my menstrual cycle. And I talked to other moms that were experiencing that. And then doctors were putting out requests that if your menstrual cycle has been disrupted, just being in the vicinity of someone with these injections, let us know, because they were observing that. I also had read the Pfizer paperwork that said they were going to do a 5-year study on myocarditis and pericarditis, so that they knew that this was causing myocarditis already. And they admitted that they were going to be, you know, looking at the data as an experiment. This is all human experiment. And so I knew that. I can't say how do you handle it when suddenly the dad drops your child off at the school and you find out he's jabbed them with what you know to be a deadly injection? Deadly, harmful, whatever. So I was hysterical. Yes, I was yelling and screaming. So they called the sheriff's department out to talk to us, and a bunch of people arrived, made a big deal out of it, but there was a very good sheriff deputy who showed up. He dismissed everybody. He talked with me. He said, "You're just very emotional right now." He didn't have the education I did on this vaccine, but he was willing to listen, and he's very rare in the field of law enforcement of many people I've encountered. Because my ex-husband was a cop, I've worked with cops, I've trained with cops, I've been around cops, and he was unique in that he said, "I don't want you to make any rash decisions. You're just emotional. Let me see you talk with your daughter." We talked. He's like, "Okay, you know, you guys go home." He seemed genuinely concerned about me. So we went home, and my daughter did not want to get another vaccine. And in light of all the domestic violence that we had experienced and the numerous police reports that I had filed with the San Mateo County Sheriff's Department that they ignored, and they wouldn't do any investigation on any of the legitimate crimes that I complained about. He'd cut my phone off a couple times. His lawyer has actually stolen two of my phones. I have witness statements from him manhandling our daughter. And he's just done a lot of stuff to me and other women that they've absolved him of. So she didn't want to go to her dad's. She did not want to go back to him. And so that's where the custody battle became heated, is she didn't want to go. So I was then having to monitor her for her symptoms, and I didn't return her to school or kept her home sick. He makes huge financial donations to the school, so they marked her truant, even though she was trying to do her homework. And I said, "She's not truant. She got this injection, and you closed the school down for 2 days when your teachers got the injection because you knew that the teachers might get sick. So I'm just monitoring her and looking, you know, she says she's having some symptoms. I just want to keep my eye on her." So then he files an ex parte to drag me into court. And because I'm so fearful of him giving her another shot and he's breached all our contracts, I just said, "You know what? No, I'm not going back to court. I'm not going to do that." And a lot of people would, you know, size me for that. but I'm trying to keep my daughter alive. I'm trying to keep her from being medically murdered, and he's not reasonable. So a lot of stuff started happening behind the scenes I didn't know about. Apparently, mm-hmm. he'd been going down to Santa Cruz PD, trying to talk to them. They were supposedly calling me, but I didn't, you know, it's not like it pops up and says it's Santa Cruz PD on the phone. There's a lot of telemarketer calls. So no one knocked on the door and said, hey, you know, we need to talk to you. Your daughter's dad, you know, wants to see his daughter. What's going on? Why are you fearful? We did speak to one officer when he did show up just a week later. And I said to my daughter, do you want to go with your dad? Do you want to see him? And she said no. And she's old enough. She's 13 and a half years old. She said no. And we talked to an officer, and he wrote a report that she said no, and she felt like she was safe. So obviously he was getting very frustrated because he didn't have control, and he went to court. I didn't show up, so I did not show up to family court. I did not know what had happened. The judge basically tried to hold a criminal trial all by himself and claimed that I had abducted my daughter. There is there was a fraudulent protective order that he signed. It was not, did not have an author on it. It did not have the right codes on it. In the papers I was given later, it wasn't even court clerk stamp filed. Apparently there was some sort of arrest warrant issued for me based on child abduction, which again, nobody had proven she was abducted or missing. So he shows up to our house when we're coming home. And it was a complete surprise. We were just hanging out with some friends. We'd been home. It was the beginning of summer in last year. And he comes at the car, and my daughter starts screaming, and he flings the back of the car door open. And we're genuinely scared of him. And he's just got this unbelievable look on his face. And he brings a friend with him. I don't know if it's a girlfriend, but she pulled her truck in front of us, and they began circling us, and both of us were screaming hysterically. So I'm screaming for help. I see the postman in the area, and I start yelling fire, because when I was young, police officers who trained us said, yell fire, because people will come out to help you if they think there's a fire, but they're not going to help you if you're screaming, you know, in the street and need police. So pretty much all the neighbors started pouring into the streets at that point in time, and we're watching this, and the postman showed up, and he said, don't you touch them. And then that's when my daughter's dad shoved his belly into me, reached around me, grabbed my daughter, and we were just screaming and screaming and screaming for help, and he would not let go. He smashes us up behind the trailer hitch, and it becomes very fearful that my
video. Nobody took any video of him being violent towards the two of you.
It's when they started taking the video, as I was just getting to, as this was escalating, is my daughter and I were smashed up at the trailer hitch, and I was very concerned that she was getting injured by being pressed up against the trailer hitch. And I was screaming for the bystanders. That was then the mailman, a female neighbor, a male neighbor. So there were three people right in the vicinity asking him to let go. And then all of a sudden I couldn't breathe. So then he was either strangling me or suffocating me or something. But I remember I couldn't breathe and I started to lose consciousness. And then I was freaking out. And I remember begging the postman, please help. I can't breathe. And then I remember him saying, everyone get your cameras out and start videotaping. But he wouldn't pull the dad off of us. And that grown man and a woman who were watching me and my daughter struggle to free ourselves from this man. And again, what normal man doesn't just back off, call the police and say, nah, I called the police and they'll deal with this. Why was he engaged in a physical battle and I wasn't breathing, able to breathe, and my daughter was being hurt? So we were struggling what felt for like 20 minutes. I don't know. It felt like 20, 25 minutes. And when the police arrived, I remember saying, oh, thank God you're here. Please get him off of us. And they put me in handcuffs and start dragging me away. So my daughter had been screaming the entire time. She's terrified. And then the police grab me away from her. And as they're pulling me away, that's when I see them start to attack my daughter and throw her to the ground. And she's screaming for me. And then they're starting to shackle her and grab her by the legs. I was hysterical, just hysterical. Mm-hmm. And I was also exhausted. And the video says it all. I mean, I don't even need to talk about it. But what is so shocking is the behavior of the police. I don't understand. And
how come you have that video and you don't have video from when he was strangling you guys? Because that would prove that this man was a violent person, and not just to you, but to his child. Now, obviously,
exactly.
He's a cop. He's an ex-cop, and he's got his buddies.
No. This is not an ex-cop. This is a horse trainer. This is not an ex-cop.
Okay. Okay.
My son's dad was a cop. He was a very good man. This is the dad of my daughter. Another neighbor took that video that you have, and she also has a short clip of when my daughter and I were struggling with him. So it's a very short clip. When I asked the postman for the videos, the video that he had, and I talked to my other neighbor, he said that the dad had threatened all of them, and so they didn't want to be involved. So apparently,
it could have been subpoenaed.
We did subpoena it. So my family court subpoenaed a bunch of stuff, and we just never got them. I don't know why, but I still don't have the police reports from Santa Cruz PD. Some of the body cam videos look edited because they're not complete. I don't have their body cam video of the postman who was the primary witness and saw all this unfold. He saw that the dad was the aggressor. I did pay a private investigator who interviewed my neighbors, and the one who took the video made a very good statement of what she saw that corroborates the video, and you can see things that match up, and there was stuff I didn't even know about. And so she did speak, but the rest of the witnesses didn't really want to talk, so he was effective. And I don't know what they said to the police because they've refused to give me the report. Happened to my daughter is really upsetting. And it shocked the mind. Like, I couldn't imagine, how do we get from we're being attacked to my daughter's being attacked by 8 police officers?
And your daughter had no problem with your ex-husband had no problem with allowing them to do that to her. I mean, a loving father would never allow that. I mean, he wouldn't have done any of he. You wouldn't have been in this situation if that was the case. But if somebody is protective of their child, they would never have allowed cops to do that to their child.
Many dads who have watched the video, they're the ones who were saying, oh, my God, I'd be in jail. If somebody did that to my kid, nobody would walk away unscathed from that. And the men, it's interesting, women and men perceive things differently. It was them who were saying, Rhonda, this looks like a setup. This was pre-planned. This was a setup. They planned to do that. And it was only after showing the video to a lot of people, getting some objective feedback, that I started to ask questions like, well, I don't understand what happened. And then when I was sitting in a Zoom meeting with the Family Court Anti-Corruption Coalition, and I was talking about this therapist that the judge ordered for my daughter to see, named Rebecca Bailey of Transitioning Families, and that Rebecca Bailey was charging $500 an hour. And they just said, what? So while we were all sitting together, we did a background check on Rebecca Bailey and found out that she's involved in these reunification camps, which are torture camps. She's $500 a day. She's under investigation for RICO, child trafficking, and child abuse. And there was a call out for victims by Kathleen Russell, the director of the Center for Judicial Excellence. So I talked to Kathleen Russell and said she's been tracking Rebecca Bailey for years and that this woman harms children. And then since then, I've talked to a victim mother who said this woman is so bad to the children. Oh, my God, she's just so horrible. So it was Rebecca Bailey's link that we found in the documents to law enforcement that suddenly put the big picture together. Okay, this looks like something really bad's going on. And, yeah, I used the word RICO. I used the word child trafficking. Nothing else makes sense. As I went through all the police reports, finally it's taken me a year to get out of all the malicious prosecution I was enduring, to get myself mentally healthy to where I could read these reports and not be triggered. I saw a lot of fabrication of evidence, misstatement of facts, speculation, facts not in evidence. And it's not looking good, not good at all for the Santa Cruz Police Department. That just, there is no excuse for treating children like that. What concerns me is that there is a culture in law enforcement, and when me and other family members talk to other police officers and they look at the video, they're desensitized. They don't see it as a problem. Like, well, it's inconclusive, or, oh, no, that looks like reasonable use of force. How any police officer can think that's reasonable use of force is just incomprehensible to me. And it shows that there's a problem in law enforcement. They're not trained in domestic abuse situations. They're not trained to de-escalate. They obviously escalated this. And as I met with Deputy Chief John Bush, I said, what was the hurry? Dad never put in handcuffs. Why didn't you let me just hold my daughter? Why wouldn't they just let me hold my daughter? Calm down. Both of us were obviously in a state of serious distress, as evidenced by all the 911 calls from my neighbors saying that the mother and the daughter needed help, and we could have discussed what was going on and gotten to the bottom of it. Clearly, my daughter didn't want to go with her dad. Clearly, we were both scared of him. Why? That's supposed to be a peace officer's job to find out, oh, you're the victims of domestic violence? What's the background? You know, how differently this would have turned out. But they don't do that. A lot of cops, they take the job because they want to beat people up. They got a chip on their shoulder. Many of them are children of alcoholics. And I can say this because I know them personally. I know those types. Going forward.
It's a very sad situation. I mean, I was failed by the cops. You know, all they do is keep adding on to reports and reports and reports. And like you said, when you started reading through your reports, I'm in the middle of writing a book. And I actually use that video as a little, my writer is using, we're not using names, but we're using that video just as a little, just as what cops do, you know, how they handle these kind of situations. I hope you don't mind. But,
please do.
I mean, now everybody knows, but I don't think they'll remember this show. But, you know, my point is that there's such hypocrisy in how they handle situations, because there's no real law anywhere on this stuff. You know,
there
they pick
is.
And choose.
They
pick
under,
and choose. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they do. What I fall under since 2015 with my first report is a California Title V Domestic Violence Prevention Act. What is a mystery to me, and we can all infer what it's really about, is how come all these police reports that I were filing with San Mateo Sheriff were being ignored? Santa Cruz PD had three prior contacts with me that showed I was the victim of domestic violence, but they ignored it. They don't care. And then we get to this day, this situation, and what my neighbors described was just utter prejudiceness, that clearly they were biased in favor of dad. My daughter's screaming for her mom. Like, how do their ears not hear that?
They don't care about that.
Growing 13-year-old daughter, a child on the ground who wants and needs her mother. The story doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. Why is she being taken? And they just don't stop, even though they're supposed to have discretion, truth finders. And definitely in my experience and what a lot of people talk about, there is prejudice. It's patriarchy. Lundy Bancroft talks about the family court in one of his most recent publications that I actually included in my complaint that I filed with Santa Cruz PD, that Lundy doesn't see any merit to the family court whatsoever. He talks about this intense hatred of mothers is in this in the last paper that I that I read. And I follow everything. I follow Lundy Bancroft. I follow the Foundation for Child Victims of the Family Court.
Have you ever been in touch with Tina Swinton, One Mom's Battle?
I have not spoken with Tina directly, but I bought her book and I have looked at her newsletters and such. But I've not spoken with her directly.
Because she's like the California, you know, person. I would reach out to her and see if she, what, you know, how she can help you or how she can guide you, or, you know, she's been through a lot of, you know, I don't know so much with the police, but I know that she's been through a lot of, she lost her kids for a while. So I think it's important that you reach out. She's behind Custody Peace. She's behind a lot of different groups. And I mean, I knew that in Florida, you know, she helped us start Family Court Awareness Month. It doesn't hurt to try and reach out to her personally. She does respond to emails. Because I've emailed her, so I could send you her email address. And just, you know, it doesn't hurt to reach out. You know, the more people you get involved in your story, to show your story. And obviously, you don't have an attorney right now, right?
No, I've had 5 attorneys, and I've spent way too much money having them stab me in the back and end up doing things that.
Because they're part of the association.
They pick the winner, and it's dad got the money. And I can see how they were working against me, so that's not the way to go. I've represented ProPer. I successfully filed an objection to one of the fraudulent forensic psychologist report that dad paid for. That when my attorney was representing me, I kept saying, are you going to object to that? You can't let this get in. And he said, oh, no, I'm not going to do anything. Not once did any family law attorney that I paid for object in court. And it was only after I started working with the Family Court Anti-Corruption Coalition and talking to other parents and learning about how to represent myself better pro se and started objecting that I did have some success. But my case has obviously gone so far off the rails. Like, it really got out of control. I don't want to go back to family court. I did what I had to do to get out. I've made a stipulation. And where I'm at is I believe this is a law enforcement problem. The fact that law enforcement has never arrested dad for the abuses and the crimes he's perpetrated to not only me but other women who have also reported crimes – this is where I believe the problem is.
Thank you.
These are criminal. A lot of criminal acts that we should not even be in family court. So I'm pressing for police reform. They're not really open to it right now. But, you know, when a lot of people see this video, how can we not press for reform? I'm also learning that a lot of these domestic violence agencies, they were useless. They weren't helping. They're taking a lot of public money to not solve problems. How come they weren't helping put my case together to prosecute Dad for the crimes he's committed to me? And this is the case for many people. So those are the reforms I'm interested in, as well as training law enforcement to really teach them. In California, like I said, we have California Penal Code Title V, which is the Domestic Violence Prevention Act, which in that act it states that it is a multidisciplinary event to help people in domestic violence situations. And it's primarily women because it's the majority of men controlling who are hurting women. I've read Barry Goldstein's book, The Quincy, Quincy Solution. I've been in contact with him. I've personally spoken to Dr. Daniel Saunders, the professor emeritus, who wrote the research paper known as the Saunders Study, which looks at the fact that only about 2% of women make false claims of domestic abuse, where the rest of them are telling the truth. So I have been in touch and with many of these people, and it is a law enforcement issue. Law enforcement.
It's a very big problem.
It's dangerous.
It's a very big problem. When it comes to the police, because that's my biggest issue too, and that's why I got into advocacy from. I started with mental health because my kids witnessed horrific things, and they had mental health issues. But my point is that cops don't realize or don't care to realize that when they don't write, and in my day, going back 6 years, 5 years, 4 years, there was no body cams. It was, you got a carbon copy with four different, the top and the middle, the bottom, another one, and you wrote a statement, and you swore a sworn statement, and then you got a copy, and they wrote a report. The majority of the time, the reports never match what you wrote, because it's typical. When I collected 3+ years of police reports, because I wanted to write my book, I couldn't believe some of the stuff in there. Some of the lies, some of the things that they didn't bother to look into when they knew things were wrong. I mean, they contradict all over the place. And that's when I knew if I'm going to write this book, somebody's going to be doing it for me, because it's impossible to choose where to start. But the problem with getting police training is that unless they do it when they are in the academy, so they teach everybody in the academy before they become who they become, they take over, they have abuse their power. Unless they start doing it from that point, you're not going to get these people to agree to be trained. They're too powerful, and you know, they're a brotherhood, and they cover for each other. And there are a few good cops out there. You know, I just watched a Zoom of a cop, how to bridge the gap between the cops and prosecution, you know, and how to get them to work together instead of, you know, just it was a very interesting thing. And one, the cop that was talking, he had said that as a kid he hated cops, and he, you know, and now he's the chief of police. I don't remember if it was Colorado or North Carolina, and he happens to have been amazing. I'm like, can you come to Florida and train and teach our cops to be human beings? Because he was saying how it would be amazing if prosecutors can come with them on a domestic violence call so they could see what goes on. And there are very few cops like that or chief of police like that out there. It's like the family court system. You're never going to change an $80 billion business. You're never going to get that changed. You could bring awareness to what's going on so that people know that they're not alone, or people that are going into it will recognize that they, you know, will recognize or know upfront what not to do. Like, I'm sure if you could go back, you might change certain things that you did or didn't do. You know, we're naive, and you know, to a lot of what goes on. And I'm assuming you, if you were able to change some of the things.
I've seen such a level of corruption that just blew my mind away. And absolutely every agency I sought help from, there's been corruption. And now that we have all these parenting groups sharing information, looking at the playbook, like I said, I can plug the names into it. Yes, there is a problem with law enforcement. You know, who is running the training? Like, I've tried to reach them before, and here it's called the Police Officer Standards and Training. So what we need to get the root at is, who are they selecting? What kind of psych evaluations are they doing? A lot of these people seem to be having cluster B personality disorders. They're choosing to be in a position of power, and they're abusing that power. How do we, the people, change that? How do we get the transparency? That's going to be the big hurdle to get over. I don't think we can go on as a society accepting this and watching children being kidnapped under color of law, people being beaten up, strangled under color of law. Look what happened at Uvalde, Texas. The police officers did not do their job to protect children and save them. So I think all of these are starting to coalesce. All these events are showing that there's a huge problem with law enforcement. What are they exactly? Who do they think they're serving? Because it's not us. I have the answers and the solutions? No. But am I going to keep asking for them? Sure. Why not? Why not? And I do have a more optimistic outlook. I've always been I just don't take no for an answer. I'm always about change and solution. I don't know what that is yet, but people do need to press back and say this is unacceptable. And when enough people do that, like right now, Santa Cruz PD is trying to sweep this under the rug because they think I don't matter. They think, oh, if we just silence her in Santa Cruz, nobody will care, nobody will know. Well, this is a big issue. I am networked with parents who've been treated wrongly, and they need to hear from the public. The public needs to start calling Santa Cruz PD, the police chief. They need to call the city council, and they need to call the district attorney's office.
I think what they need to do is get this video out there. Send it to the chief of police of
Santa Cruz. I've sent it to all the heads. The Family Court Anti-Corruption Coalition did a Project Pink Slip, and it's posted on their website under Justice for BNR. And I sent it to the head of POST. I sent it to at least three or four members in the training division of POST. I sent it to the International Association Chiefs of Police. I sent it to the district attorneys. I sent it to the attorney general.
What about to
got
the
a
paper?
Form letter back.
None of the papers
and none of the mainstream news media have responded. For some reason, they're not interested, and that is raising a big red flag as to why not. It's not fitting a narrative that they want to sell, and I don't know why not. But I did send it to a lot of people, and so now it's just having to go grassroots. It's having to go from mother to mother, peer to peer, to open the conversation and the dialogue. And you know, it'll reach the right ears at some point in time. I feel like I'm doing a very good job with this interview because I had a conversation with a man who wanted to help, and he wanted to show the video to two more cop friends of his. And when I hear from how other cops speak, and again, there always feels like there's blame on me, the mother, it triggers me. And it doesn't put me in the right frame of mind.
No,
and that's
you're doing great, because you have to remember, my listeners are in your shoes. It may not be necessarily something like this, but they understand what you're dealing with. So What I was saying before is, first I'm going to give out our number again, 516-531-9643. We'd love you to call in. You know, down here in Florida, I was helping a mom that goes to pick up her kid, and the father says, sorry, she doesn't want to go with you. She's 11 years old. She says, I don't want to go with you. Obviously, she's been brainwashed. And the cops say, well, what could we do? She's with her father. That's what I'm saying. There's so much, you know, then I know many other moms who have 50-50 and are scared to be arrested, so they hand over their child to known abusers. And, you know, so it's so wishy-washy. And it seems like every state has pretty much their similar situations on how they handle all of this. So, there's no rhyme or rhythm to the cop, one of the cops at one of the pickups for this woman said, sorry, this is not our jurisdiction. And here you have, when I saw your video, I'm like, oh, it's not your jurisdiction, but it's okay to throw a kid on the floor and handcuff her. You know, I mean, it's like that's child abuse.
Absolutely child abuse. They nearly killed her. They kneeled on her neck, and she said she couldn't breathe. She was already in trauma. I looked at the Institute on Prevention of Strangulation that discusses all the health effects associated with something like that, and that you can die 24 hours to 36 days later. And when I was in the back of their patrol car, because they handcuffed me and put me in the patrol car, they said, your daughter's hyperventilating. Well, according to the Institute on Strangulation, she could have had vomit in her lungs that was burning. So my daughter's hysterical, been attacked by her dad and the cops, and their reaction was to put a helmet on her head, inject her with a drug, and lock her up for 3 days. Like, on what planet does any of that make sense? That's what they did to my child. They put a helmet on her head. One of the witnesses saw them put a helmet on her head, inject her with a needle, and then they locked my daughter up for 3 days by herself.
They Baker acted her. That's what it's called, 72 hours.
What do you call
it? It's called Baker Act, when they probably used the excuse that she was going to harm herself.
Yeah, I'm not, for my daughter's privacy, I don't use those words.
Okay.
In California,
I mean,
it's
I never heard of them injecting something.
But what I believe happened after doing the research on Dr. Rebecca Bailey, who breaks the attachment with the parent through these fake reunification programs, is I believe that Dr. Bailey will have ordered it somehow so that they could traumatize my daughter. And then what do you think is going to happen? Okay, hey, look, you know, you just got beat up by the cops. We're going to lock you away. Are you ready to go home with your dad now? Are you ready to be a good girl now? And then now this fake therapist is only doing therapy with dad and my child. And I did get an interview with her through a coerced and duress stipulation. I said, according to your website, you reunify children with their parents. Are you going to reunify me with my daughter? And she said, no, she's a psychopath. The woman is dangerous. So the other caveat is that woman who is so dangerous to children, Rebecca Bailey, needs to be removed. She needs to be in jail. She needs to be prosecuted. There are other victims. So looking at this whole event of that video then even meets the eye. I haven't seen my daughter in over a year since that day, since she was screaming for help.
Nope.
Clearly loved me. And now they're brainwashed.
And no connection at all, no phone call, nothing.
No phone calls, no emails, doesn't have a picture of me, we haven't talked. I had to stipulate again,
they took away your right?
I was being maliciously prosecuted. There was some sort of temporary, and the judge doesn't even have the constitutional right to do this. He tried to say that temporarily I didn't have legal rights to my daughter. Well, they can't do that. It's unconstitutional.
And what's the reason?
Judge, and this is the messed up part about family court that's unconstitutional. There was no trial. There was no indictment. There was no arraignment. There was no jury trial. I had no attorney. Before this attack, the judge had claimed that I posed imminent harm to my daughter. He just made that determination by himself out of magic, and that I abducted my child. That's what he claimed. However, when I went to the criminal court and I showed the district attorney, ADA, whatever, and the judge and my lawyer this video, they went, oh, my God, Dad's weaponizing the court. No, we don't believe you abducted your child. You know, they heard my side of the story. They had
both
sides of the facts. Well, actually, they dropped the charge of abduction. They said, you didn't abduct your child, but we don't throw cases out of here. Will you do a no contest to a misdemeanor of custodial interference? And I'm like, I'm like, what does that mean? And they said it wasn't that big of a deal. I really wanted a jury trial, but my family law attorney threatened me and got really mad at me because I wanted a jury trial. In hindsight, I would go for the jury trial. I really thought I was going to be able to get my daughter sooner if I could get out of the criminal court proceeding and get back into the family court to try to see my daughter. But the judge wanted to then.
That's what they do to you. They try to put something criminal on you.
They do. So they didn't succeed in that because a misdemeanor is just a misdemeanor. And then in the family court hearing, because I'd written my own objection to the fraudulent forensic psychologist hit piece on me, then the judge said, I'm not going to let you see your daughter until you do a psych exam. And it needs to be a forensic psychologist, and opposing counsel is going to have to choose which one it is. I'm like, what? I don't think so. Pushing back on that, because that's another play to try to terminate your parental rights.
Right.
And
I
saw that.
Right.
And I was like, no, I'm not going down that road. So they pretty much had their playbook down. They had their knife in me. And I just wasn't going to play ball. My daughter and I have a very close relationship, and I just am going to have to pray to God that she's strong enough to withstand this while we sort this out. And like I said, I am hoping somewhere justice is going to prevail. I have to believe in that somehow, but it's not going back into family court because that's a criminal organization. I'm not playing ball with a criminal organization. They're mad at me because I called them out on it. They're really mad at me. Too bad. Too bad.
I'm
going to
bring Lucia on. Hey, you.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi, Bailey.
How are
you? I'm good. Thanks. I have been listening since the beginning. I just want to tell Rhonda that she's doing wonderful. And I do understand. I mean, I didn't want to interrupt because she's going so fluently, you know, about the way it happened in her case. And I just want to let her know that she's doing great. We know every time we talk about our case, it's like you're opening a wound. You know, it hurts. It hurts. And I admire her. I'll be breaking down. I told her today that I'm not ready to go on your show because I'll be breaking down. I'm not ready yet. So I do understand, you know, her concern because she told me what happened this afternoon with her. And there's always those that want to turn off the light on you. You know, when you have the little light, they want to continue your journey in this life. There's always someone that comes in and try to push you back. So I was just telling her, don't pay attention to him. Just go on. And I just think she's done great. And I just want to say hello. And both of you are wonderful.
Thank you, Lucia.
And so are you.
Because I feel like
and
I'm...
so are you.
Aw.
So,
no,
Lucia's
no, no. You're doing fine.
A very... Lucia's the background. She stays in the background, but she makes all the... you know, she speaks to many women, and she makes all the connections, and she does a lot of the social media stuff, but she's a little, you know, a little fly in the, in the background.
Herbert. She calls me a hermit.
Yeah. A recluse. A recluse.
I know. Well, listen, I learned my lesson. I learned my lesson. Sometimes it's better just to stay in the back and be more productive than be in the front and just being, you know, whatever. I'm happy where I am now. I have met wonderful people. Like I met Rhonda. I have met other people. I have met you, Bailey. So it's just like sometimes you don't have to be in front of the line to be helpful. You can be in the on the back of the line and still be helpful. Mm-hmm. And I hope I am in one of those cases. And my goal is to connect people, and hopefully I can help them. I don't have any agenda. I don't get anything for this. My goal is to see the children being helped, and hopefully, you know, if not easy, but the parents could realize that the kids need both parents, if it's possible, and stop this game playing with the kids. You know, it just too sad. Too many cases happening. But anyway, I just want to say that you both are doing great, and I have been listening since the beginning.
Thank you. Well,
thank you,
Lucia. I hope you'll stay on. You'll stay on. You can mute yourself and listen.
Yeah, I'm going to stay on. I'm
listening.
Okay.
And to touch on what you said, Lucia, like I think that what's interesting about my situation is that I had a previous partner that I was amicably separated from. And my son said, Mom, you and Dad divorced so well, you made it seem so natural. And so he can see the difference that my daughter's dad is not reasonable, that he's controlling.
Does he have a relationship with her?
Does my son have a relationship with his sister? He did. They used to be very close, but now because of what her dad has done, he just hasn't been in contact with her. She has not been in contact with any of her maternal family or maternal family friends. And that's, you know, that's child abuse. That is child psychological abuse. And any qualified clinical psychologist can tell you that.
It's control.
Which goes
control
to show. Look at the dad. What kind of dad does that to his own child? What kind of dad pays a nefarious, fake, fraudulent therapist $500 an hour to gatekeep the child away from mom? And those were Rebecca Bailey's own words to me. I'm concerned you think I'm gatekeeping your daughter from you. So she's taunting. She likes to throw that out there. So I'm looking for those solutions. I don't want to be controlled. I've already lived that. And that's why I won't play ball in family court. And it's a much different stance. I can't win in there because it's just stacked against me. It's rigged against me. So why would I ever step foot into it again? It just doesn't make any sense. And before I knew anything about Rebecca Bailey and the harm she's doing, I at least thought, okay, well, my daughter has her horses. Is she safe enough with her dad? And if Rebecca Bailey were out of the picture, then maybe I would feel like my daughter was safe enough. But the fact that he's paying a MK Ultra brainwashing thing that doesn't sit well with me, and I'm trying to figure out how to solve that problem. So I filed a complaint to the Board of Psychology. Like I said, I've been in touch with Kathleen Russell of the Center for Judicial Excellence, and I'm pushing on those walls. Because once Rebecca Bailey gets taken out of the picture, that saves a lot of children. And my goal is that, you know, my experience won't just be for me and my daughter. I'm hoping that our experience can help save and rescue other children from these horrible crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's
like I wish I can like get, you know, something has to be done. And
yeah,
you know, and I think you're doing what you can, you know, but more big organizations that have power have to bring your they have to bring your story to the forefront. And
mm-hmm.
and you need to have people that will you know, dedicate time to help you. I know you don't want to go back to family court, but, you know, have you researched that judge? Do you know if he's done things like this to other people where, you know, you can start filing complaints against him to, I think it's the...
And then what? Right
some,
now where we're
well,
at?
Well, then you can get him to recuse
aren't...
himself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then you get him...
And...
Then he has to...
And...
Yeah.
There are other problems with the other judges in San Mateo County. So
yes.
I've seen problems with Rachel Holt. I've seen problems with Renee Reyna. She's the one who put the unconstitutional gag order on me. I've seen problems with Elizabeth Hill, who was the presiding judge who organizes these judges. I really firmly believe that Dad needs to be arrested for trying to kill me. Like, he strangled me. He attacked
well,
me and
then,
my daughter.
Then you have to, then you, then you, you must
273.5.
You must get.
And that's what I'm pressing on. That's my angle, is if we can get, persuade, however, by public opinion, to get law enforcement to do their job, then that changes the storyline. Do you see?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we need to go. Completely criminal and racketeering.
I think cops need to do their job. What I'm thinking right now is short term, not long term. Long term, we need tremendous things to change. But I sent you two emails. One is Tina's email, and then the other one is One Mom's Battle, which is her also. And it's
mm-hmm.
an organization that she started, and it's called the National Safe Parents Coalition, and it's groups from all over, it's people from all over, and they start to bring, like, you can something, I don't know what your daughter's name is, but start. You know, whatever your daughter's name, law. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And use that video to promote the change that you want to see. Like, you know, they have Pike's Law in California.
Oh, Pikie's Law. Pikie's Law.
Sorry. Right. So that's what they're. But that's okay. Unfortunately, these are children that are gone. But we
yes.
can do. You
mm-hmm.
can do law in your daughter's. You can start a petition where you can do a law in your daughter's name, or whatever you want to name it, and start.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to go to these organizations that are out there, and have many, many people belonging to the organization, where they show that clip. And yes, we need to change with law enforcement. This is not okay. You know, first of all, those videos of what happened to you prior would have been subpoenaed. If a proper person subpoenaed them, they would have made its way to the court or to the police, the right police or whatever. And they could have, or you could have taken it and showed it out to the public and showed this is exactly what happened right before that. And I was
yeah.
interested, uh-huh. you know, it's about, you know, social media is right now is the biggest platform to get messages and laws and things done. And that's really, you know, how to do it. And it's about the safety of your child. Your child was in, you know, your child's father was standing right there when your child was being abused, when child abuse was happening, and he had no issue with that. And mm-hmm. and that's the angle I would take, is this is the man who has my child, a man that stood there with no problem while his child was abused.
Wasn't trying to save her, rescue her, stop them, didn't complain,
nothing.
Didn't yell at
he
them.
He had no problem.
Nothing.
No. And no. The fact that if, so basically, you know, it proves right there and right that proves that he has no problem with abuse. And
yes. Thank you for calling that out.
And why would you have had an issue? Why would people not believe that right before that he was strangling you guys?
Yeah.
And if you want to take this the criminal route, then take it the criminal route and get copies of those videos somehow. Hopefully those people still have them. And nobody, there's no cameras. Well, this happened a year ago. So nobody had cameras in front of their apartment.
But it's still in the cloud. If the people who caught her with the cell phone, they can't, you know, it's in the cloud.
Not
they can't delete.
No, you could delete it. You could delete. You could delete it.
No.
If they wanted to get rid of it, they can get rid of it.
I didn't know
no.
that. I thought you could not.
No. It you could delete from the cloud. You can. If you don't want to have something on your phone, you can delete it.
Well,
because I have stuff
in
10 different places. No, it could be deleted, especially if it's a year later. But
Bailey, I didn't send you, but I do have a short 4-second clip of Dad attacking us, and it is provocative enough, and it does corroborate what was said, taken by the same neighbor who took the video of the police. Huh?
If you want to share it with me, I can.
Yeah, I can send it to you. It is
yes.
posted. It's also posted by the Family Court Anti-Corruption Coalition. So I did have that to corroborate. And yes, it is disappointing that the other people would not provide the videos. But Dad scared
yeah.
them. He look at.
Okay,
I mean,
but so that's
they
another
saw
thing.
What he did to
that's,
me.
Right. And he probably did threaten them. He might have actually.
Which is also
gone
against
to them
the law.
And threatened
it's a
them.
Violation. Yeah.
Well, it's also abuse because when you threaten someone, that's abuse. So you're
mm-hmm.
right then and there. There are three incidences of abuse. One at his own physical hand, possibly verbally, and one where his child was being abused and he stood by. And you're giving this
mm-hmm.
man the rights to a child, his child.
And
I'm
the family court
scenarios.
Judge has seen both videos. You know, just really digest
but
that, too.
But it's
and
criminal. This is criminal. This is criminal.
This
so
is why. I just want to say why I won't go back into family court is that I was actually arguing with the judge about this. The judge didn't say one word about the video. He has it. Not one word about Dad's behavior and the cops beating up our child. Exactly what you're talking about. How come the family court judge wasn't all over Dad about that? How come he wasn't questioning him about that? Why does he think
because
it's okay?
Because in family court, when everybody's in cahoots, especially including your own attorney, it's predetermined. They're going to find
yes.
any way. Unfortunately, you not showing up to court didn't help you.
It didn't. I admit that it didn't help.
Right.
I say
like,
I admit
with
that
all those
it didn't
kind
help.
Of things, kind of things, arguing with a judge, you know, you have to do it the right way through
really being a pro se, doing your research, filing motions and all that kind of stuff. Otherwise, take that whole situation and go to criminal court and try and fight it that way. But I did send you two different links, and I would definitely go sign up for the National Safe Parents Coalition and share your story, share the clips, and see what they can do, and reach out to Tina. And, you know, she's very big, and she knows, she's in California. She knows a lot of people, and she may have advice for you. You know, she may have ways to help you, you know, I don't want to say promote this whole thing, but the right direction to take this. Because, you know, until your daughter's 16, that's another 4 years from now, 2 years from now.
No, it's a year and a half, from
okay.
now.
You have no idea the brain, I mean, I had a young adult that went, after everything I did for him and helped him and everything, went to live with his father. And after all the abuse that we both took, we endured. And it took almost 2 years, but he left him, and he's not there anymore, and he's recognizing all of it. But it took a month, not even, for his father to brainwash him. And he was 23 years old.
Wow.
So little. Now he can go back and say, well, for 7 months he gave me everything, and he did, you know, he love bombed him, manipulated him, you know, did everything a narcissist does. And, you know, the best thing my ex-husband did was get my son a very good therapist. And that's why my son is sane, and had the courage to leave when he couldn't take it anymore. So, but my point is that it can happen to anyone, because remember, we got sucked into it. Like, I couldn't even blame my son for leaving and doing what he did, because I got sucked into it, and I got married to him, and this is his father. You know, you got sucked into it, and you stayed with this man for however long you stayed with him. So, and you didn't realize until it was too late. Just imagine a little girl. So, you know, and I'm not trying to upset you or scare you, but fact is fact, is that this man can be doing so much damage. You want that girl away from him as soon as possible. And, you know, that, you know, Lucia can tell you from her own experience. I mean, the same kind of stuff happened to her, and, you know, she's dealing, you know, with a young adult that, you know, is not real, whatever, I'm not going to say, if Lucia wants to say, she could say, but, you know, when you're brainwashed, you're brainwashed, and to undo that damage, if it can be undone, I mean, and she doesn't have a therapist that's good. She's helping the damage. It's a scary thing.
It's absolutely,
you know,
scary. Trying to stay sane through it, and I've identified at least 36 people who are all in on this. I'm outnumbered, and right now, what's so sad is I haven't had enough people on my side advocating for me and helping me, and hopefully that's the step we're going into, but I'm outnumbered at the moment.
Right.
As far as people willing to go to bat and help.
Well, you're making your way in the right direction, because you're coming out here, you're speaking up, you're breaking the silence, you're not giving up, and you're fighting for your daughter's safety and her life and her sanity. And, you know, I can get you on another podcast, another fellow advocate who lost her children to family court corruption.
And it was all pre-planned. I mean, she walked into a courtroom, she had no chance. I mean, it's years ago, but her kids are young adults now, and, you know, some of them have been in touch with her. But, you know, she does a podcast, and I think you guys would be a great match. And the more you just share your story and you go out there and you speak, you know, the awareness.
I was hoping you were going to mention that to introduce her to that other podcast, because I was going to tell her that. But first of all, I wanted her to, you know, to experiment yours, and then I knew you're going to recommend the other one. I do like the other one too, because the story is very similar too. And it's going to be a good thing. Hopefully the other one is available too, to interview her.
Right. And she wrote a book.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, I understand more of the cop stuff. I empathize because that's what I went through. And I could tell you right now, unless it's becomes federal, on a federal level, that each state must start training, and to what degree, it's not going to happen. Because like I said, they're abusers, they abuse their power, and I'm not saying all cops, they don't have enough knowledge, they don't follow the laws. Like you mentioned, the interference law, the interference with how they use that, but you weren't interfering. You were being abused, and you weren't withholding your daughter, you know, and whatever happened prior to that, there was really no right. They, you know, you weren't warned or anything like that. But it's interesting how they use whatever laws they want, when they want to. And again, we have that law in this state. And then in cases, they're not using that law where they should be using it. It's just one huge corruption. And it's a shame because, you know, we really have to, I'm training to shoot, you know, to be able to buy a gun, to own a gun. And we have to learn how to protect ourselves, because there's no one that's protecting us.
Absolutely, and I am 100% with you on that. And I tell people, I tell other moms, do not let anyone take your child away from you. You are the last shield of self-defense and protection. And once they take that child away from you, the child is being harmed. And we have to stop thinking that the cops are going to help. Because they're not, and that the courts are going to, because they're not. So we have to be willing to lay down our life for our children and give it our best effort. And we have the Constitution. The Second Amendment says we have the right to defend ourselves and to defend others. And we're not exercising
They're slowly trying to take away the Constitution.
Because they don't want us to defend ourselves. Look at where we're at right now. I don't think we need police. If people actually defended themselves, we wouldn't need police. Bad guys would be taken out, and we would be safer. And if, again, in a community where everybody's defending themselves, bad guys are, you know, they're going to think twice, like, okay, I can't break into that house because I won't walk out. And that's a good thing. You know, you have safety by the threat of a consequence. There's the word. There are no consequences in society right now. And over the COVID lockdowns, the sheriffs in California released the dangerous offenders. Why on earth did they do that? Who authorized that? Because we the people didn't authorize it. We have a lack of consequences, and that's where we need to get to.
And
people
and
using
cops
their
are not held
right?
And cops are not held accountable. I mean, those cops.
They're still working right now. I see them on the beat. I can tell you that. It makes me sick to my stomach that they're still getting a paycheck. and not being held accountable for it.
Yes, it's true.
It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. And like I said, that I have been censored trying to share with it in the community so that our community members haven't heard about this. It's being suppressed. And believe me, I'm sharing peer-to-peer, starting to get some traction locally, but it's been hard because they've been trying to conceal the truth, the dirty truth. And Santa Cruz does have a problem with police misuse of force. Obviously, I looked at the website. Obviously, I looked up their previous history, and they have a really bad track record. So there's something wrong with our department. They're not protecting people. So people have to protect themselves for sure. And I think that's just, you know, everywhere. We have to have that mindset of protecting ourselves. And some parents
And that's what you were trying to
do. You know, they put
me
in handcuffs so I couldn't protect my child. They put me in handcuffs because what is a mama bear going to do? A mama bear is going to get in there, shield her baby cub.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I didn't let dad continue to hurt my daughter, and I was in the middle, and I wasn't, you know, I was losing consciousness, and I was trying everything I could to protect my child. And these men who stood by and watched that, yeah, I got a beef with them too. How can any man watch a mother and child go through that and not have the right response? They could have put him down, and they should have. And I wish I lived someplace where there were brave men who would have been like, this is unacceptable. No man's allowed to touch a woman. And I wish they had dealt with him. So
Did anybody take pictures of the bruises on your neck?
There weren't any bruises on my neck, and that doesn't necessarily happen. I was in jail for 2 days. I didn't get any medical care. I lost 10 pounds. I didn't feel well. I was being deprived of my rights in there. I didn't have clean water. I didn't have any privacy. I had to use the bathroom in front of the whole room and jail staff. They wanted me to feel it. They really wanted to put me down. And I'm not joking. A lot of players were involved in this. And it's a good thing that, you know, I believe in God, and I knew something like this was going to happen. And I prayed. I sang songs of worship to God, and I prayed while I was in detention.
What was the reason again? Are you for abducting your child? That was why
allegedly.
You were in jail.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah, the allegation.
Did they serve you?
Did
they read you your rights?
They read me Miranda, but they did not show me the arrest warrant, and they did not show me the protective order, and that's a no-no. There's a lot of due process problems. And then they immediately slapped a restraining order on me instead of dad, and that's also where the playbook is like, wait a minute, dad attacked me. But they've already got this stuff filled out and ready to go, and it's got 3 points of perjury on it. What's going on here? So they were immediately obstructing me from having any contact with my daughter and making it very difficult. And again, I'm just going to keep taking it back to Dr. Rebecca Bailey. She knows what she's doing, sees the link between law enforcement. This whole picture started to emerge. It's racketeering, child trafficking, and child abuse, and a lot of people participated. I got walked down the plank. I had no idea any of this was happening. But I see it now. How do I unravel it? It's a big thing to unravel.
We see it when it's too late.
Duck and the frog is boiling water.
Now, let me ask you a question. When you went to the prosecutor and you showed them the video, and do you have the paperwork that they dropped those charges?
Yes.
So what
and
is
that's
the
what
reason?
I, that's what I told the family. That's what I told the family court judge, because he kept trying to say that I was guilty. And I said, no, I'm not. He's like, didn't they say you were guilty? I said, no, I'm not.
So what's the excuse of your daughter not being with you now? Like, what's their, what is?
Well, right now, what they were doing is, they were trying to get they were trying to grant Dad a domestic violence restraining order on me, which meant that I would not be able to have a gun, and they wanted to prohibit me from seeing her for 5 years. So basically the rest of her childhood. And the judge
on
was
what basis? He was the woman on what at least they have to
exactly.
have a basis, whether they make it up or not. What was the basis?
They lied.
You have proof.
They absolutely lied. He attacked
you
me
have proof.
And then Dad
right.
The
and
judge saw the videos. Yeah, the judge saw the videos. But, you know, they're corrupt. What can I tell you? Of course you're asking questions that any normal, sane person would say that's not possible, but
no,
you're not
I,
dealing
I
with.
I know it's corruption. Right? I know it's all corruption. And it, but, so, did your ex-husband get a restraining order against you?
No, we got it. I got it dismissed by signing a coerced stipulation, which is a stay away order for 2 years. And in that coerced stipulation, I was able to talk to Rebecca Bailey because she wasn't talking to me prior to that, even though she'd seen my daughter for 7 months at that point in time. It says that my daughter can contact me. All she has to do is tell her dad or Dr. Bailey that she wants to contact me. And then it has some other just basic, I won't contact my daughter, I won't contact dad. I needed to do that because the judge wanted to put the DVRO on me, the domestic violence restraining order on me, which is laughable because I should have had that against dad. I'm not the one who drove three counties away. He came to my house. I've never been to his workplace. I don't even talk to him. I don't live in the same county. I pose no threat to him, nor have I ever. And then the judge wanted to get that psych evaluation on me so that they could write a false report. And the language in it was, oh, so that we can diagnose mom and get her on meds. So you
right,
see, they've
right,
already
right.
had it wrapped up in what they want to do. And the judge didn't equally apply it to dad. Now, I the filings in the court requiring a domestic violence investigation with all the evidence of the crimes that dad has committed, with the 40 order, with the 40 court order violations dad has committed, but the judge has ignored all of that. And he should have ordered a psych evaluation on dad too. Otherwise, it shows that he's being biased. Now,
right.
I'm telling you, I will repeat, I do not want to go back into family court. I'm not going to, period.
You need to deal with this on in a criminal way, I guess.
Criminal. Dad needs to be prosecuted for all the crimes he's committed to me. That includes, so there's no statute of limitation on attempted homicide. He needs to be charged for the spousal battery and in front of a child, and he trafficked me. I was a slave by not paying me for the 9 years that I worked my ass off in the business. That's a violation of the 13th Amendment. He treated me as a slave, and he's done that to a lot of people, as well as committed fraud to me, as well as cut my phone off, custodial interference, horse abuse. I mean, there's just a long, long list of crimes that I have documented that I filed reports for in San Mateo County, but they chose to ignore it. But they still exist. They're still uninvestigated and unfollowed through. Maybe this is where it finally gets all the attention it deserves.
Right.
Because there's
and
a pattern.
Have you ever sat down with a criminal attorney?
No, I don't. Criminal attorneys typically do defense work. I'm not looking for defense work. The messed up situation is the police have to put the case together and present it to the district attorney, and then the district attorney has to file charges on it.
Right.
That's
I understand.
How the process works.
But you're talking about the police who abuse their power and are abusers themselves that abused your child in front of her parents and other people, and you want them to put together a proper report.
Right? They're supposed to do their job. It sounds ridiculous.
They're not. Unless you get help from a DV advocate and you find a good one, or you an outside organization that deals with domestic violence, a domestic violence shelter. You know, we have one in Broward County, not far from me, where they have advocates to help with this kind of stuff. Maybe you need to go to a different town and find one that has the right people that can help you with this, because the police are not going to do their job.
And what I had hoped is that with the video circulating, Derek Chauvin was eventually prosecuted for killing George Floyd because of the video. And I had really hoped that this was going to get the nationwide attention to put the pressure
Unfortunately, it was because he died. So when there's a death, there's more attention. And that's what's sad, is that it has to take a death. And what we are doing is trying to prevent a death, God forbid.
Right.
Whether it's by the hands of the father you have nobody telling you what's going on with her? Is she
No,
healthy?
I haven't had any I don't know yet. No. I don't want to violate the order.
No, you can't.
I have to be
you
very
can't.
Careful. So I have to be very
right.
careful.
Right. It's sad because we don't want a law in her name, God forbid, because she's no longer here. God forbid. Better get a law in her name while... you know, or something, you know, to help prevention from this happening and from getting the cops to do their job. And it's very sad because that's absolute child abuse. I mean, even if, I know you call it something else in California, but even a Baker Act doesn't give you permission to do something like that.
No, there was no excuse for what they did to her, and it's very sad that she suffered that. It was just it's inexcusable.
Did you ever go to Internal Affairs? I mean, I know that they work
That's
with
what
the
I
cops.
Filed.
No.
Yes, my sister filed a complaint on August 13 last year, and they still haven't concluded it, and then I just added to my complaint. So it is under investigation right now. And as I said, I've met with the Deputy Chief John Bush to give him a little bit of my background on my side of it. And then I wrote my own complaint. And so I printed their policies out and I showed everywhere I only had 4 days to do it. But I found a lot of policies that they violated. And then again, I gave them the evidence that I had.
Don't they have a certain amount of time, like the Internal Affairs has a certain amount of time to get back to you, and same with the police?
They have 90 days. So I originally submitted my complaint on July 1st. They said they couldn't open the files. I hand-walked in some hard copies yesterday. My sister filed hers in August. They should have responded to her in 90 days, but she didn't follow through on it.
Oh.
Maybe a blessing because now I've added to it. Why did this take so long? I didn't have advocates. I didn't have good advocates, and then I was being maliciously prosecuted, so I couldn't say anything. So they were very effective at putting gag orders on me and getting the time that they needed to brainwash my daughter. Going backwards and looking at this whole playbook, now I see how it went. And I remember hearing opposing counsel say, we need more time, we need more time. And it's because they were trying to break my daughter. They had it down.
Wow.
They knew what they were doing. It's so sick and disgusting. All I can do is try to find accountability in the aftermath. Talking about Santa Cruz PD, that's accountability. And I told Deputy Chief Bush, I said, people know your names. We're talking about this. You may think you're suppressing this, the local community, but we're all talking about this, and the parents are waiting to see how you handle my complaint.
Right. That's funny, because I told the police in the county that I lived. I ended up getting my ex arrested finally after a long time, but I fought and fought and fought, and it wasn't for a very long time, but I mean, he didn't do a lot of time, but I told them, I'm writing a book, and I'm putting your department in my book, and how you failed me and my kids, and the damage that it caused, because it's lifelong damage. Trauma is lifelong damage. We heal, but there's still triggers. There's still trauma.
This doesn't go away. They've impacted us for the rest of my life. How I choose to react to that trauma is my choice.
Right.
And as I experience, when I have to deal with a cop, I don't like it at all.
Oh, my gosh.
Some days it's easier. Some days it's not. But I see them as friendlies anymore at all.
No.
It's up to them to regain public trust, because they don't have the public trust right now. And I'm just going to keep speaking that. I'm just going to speak my words over it. They need to regain public trust. They need to shape up. They need to reform.
Right.
Yes.
That video
is
very crucial. I mean, I would be out there in front of the station with that video up on the screen, doing every kind of, with as many people as you can. Doing demonstrations, go in front of the courthouse,
I need people to back me up. I don't feel safe. I'm not going to let myself be harassed. I have to be careful.
No, you need to get people to back you up. You do. And
people won't do it. In this area, they're just very selfish, and they only care about themselves, and they don't want to be involved. And that's really sad. They watched my daughter be abused, and they don't want to be involved. And that says something about the community I live in. I'm not happy with it. I don't want to stay in this community. It's not a good community because of that.
I know.
You would think
I went through that too.
It doesn't matter what they think about me. I don't care what they think about me. Right is right. Wrong is wrong. And abusing a child, as you said, is wrong on so many levels. And we didn't deserve it.
No, absolutely not. I hope that you reach out to One Mom's Battle and Tina Swinton. If you can put your story down on paper and attach the videos and, put everything you can. They may promote your story. Some of these organizations will help you promote your story, and they're big, and they're powerful. And, people that have been through similar situations are more likely to help you. If you want to send me that clip of the video, I'll attach it to the show. I will hook you up with a friend of mine that has a podcast, and from one podcast to the next, keep going, sharing your story, stay strong, and don't give up. Just when you have faith and you believe there's a higher power, that's how we get through this, and that's really who's going to really help us. And just believe that we're going to be Lucia. Once she gets attached to something, she will promote it and promote it and promote it and put it out there. And, I saw that so many of us shared the show tonight, the same group over and over. And, It's out there. It's out there. Thousands of people will see it. And let's pray that, you know, something good will come out of it in one way or another. I believe eventually there will be. I have to close out the show. I want to thank Rhonda Reyna for being my guest tonight, and Lucia for calling in, and we had another person that called in. Hopefully she's still listening. I'm going to mute you guys. Please, people out there, share her video, share the story, and anybody out there that's listening, that does listen to the show later on, and has any advice, you can email me or send me a message, and I will get it to her, or I guess you can find her, Rhonda Reyna, on Facebook Messenger, and we have to, something's got to give. We have to get change done, because this was child abuse by our cops, and that's not okay. They're supposed to protect the children, and they're supposed to protect us, and they're not. I want to thank Charlie for helping me set up my show and sending me out there to do this on my own. I want to thank Joe Cox for giving me Blog Talk Radio time. If anybody wants to be on the show or send me a message, it's thenevergiveupshow.com, and there's an email address there. And again, never give up, and have a great night.
With a little perseverance, you can get things done. Battle blind adherence that has conquered some. And nobody wants to know you're not. Nobody wants to show you how bad you lost on your own. You can never surrender. And if you're back on him, you own. You can never surrender. And when the night is cold and dark, you can see. You can see light, 'cause no one